Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. What's so important about the vice presidency, and what are the implications of Kamala Harris, the first woman of color on a major party ticket? Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. Joe Biden, the presumed Democratic nominee for president of the United States, has chosen Senator Kamala Harris of California to run with him on the national ticket as vice president. Harris is the first woman of color to run on a major party national ticket in the United States. On today's show, we will explore the impact of a vice presidential candidate on the success of the national ticket. We will explore the impact of this choice on Joe Biden's chances to win the 2020 election. And we will broadly examine the role of the vice president, both electorally and within the governance of the presidency. Our guests today are Jeremy Suri, professor in the Department of History and the LBJ School of Public Affairs. He holds the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership and Global Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. He is the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. And Arthur Auerbach, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern California. He is the author of The Dividing Line, on capital punishment. So Professor Suri, I'll start with you. This is a historic selection. How important is the history behind this selection?
I think the history behind this election is absolutely crucial in three ways. First, vice presidents are generally chosen to convey to the voting public, at least in the modern American political setting, someone who is ready to take over, to be a heartbeat away, we like to say. And so what you want to convey when you're choosing a vice president, if you're in Joe Biden's position, is someone who looks like they could be a president. And for Kamala Harris to be seen as presidential by as many people as she obviously is seen by, that's a remarkable accomplishment in American society. We've had an African-American male president, but we have not had an African-American female president. In fact, African-American women are one of the least represented groups in American society in many leadership positions. So this is an incredible step forward in that way. Second, it's a step forward because the Democratic Party has never had anyone at the top of the ticket from California. We've had presidents from California, but they've been on the Republican side, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. The traditional home of Democratic politics has been the Midwest and the Northeast, and with the one exception of Texas and Lyndon Johnson, it's pretty much been other regions of the country. This shows that the Democratic Party, with Kamala Harris, is now firmly situated in California. We kind of knew that already, but this really puts a stamp on that. We can expect to see more national candidates from California coming out of this. And then third and finally, I think what's very significant about Kamala Harris in this moment is that she is so much younger than the presidential candidate, and there's a very high likelihood that she will be an active participant in Joe Biden's administration if elected. And so we're looking at someone who's going to have policy influence. We can imagine that she'll have policy influence around race issues, around criminal justice issues, and around issues regarding foreign policy as well. So her policy positions matter a lot more than they have for other vice presidential candidates in the past.
And Professor Auerbach, how important has the vice president been in previous elections? It seems like it can hurt a candidate. Can it really help a candidate?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know, the vice presidency selection does tend to be one that you're certainly not going to win based on who you pick, but you absolutely could lose if you just look at McCain-Palin as a perfect example. That was such a selection that came out of left field, and I think people really started to associate that particular vice president selection with a lack of judgment. And if you're going to have that lack of judgment at that level, my goodness, what might come down the road? So, I think that Joe Biden, personally was looking for a partner, for someone that he could really work with, much like he worked with Barack Obama when Obama was president. And so, at least up front, face value, it looks like he's probably picked somebody that. That he can work with and has a breadth of experience. So it looks like he's off to a good start.
So, Professor Suri, it seems like if there was one constituency that Joe Biden could count on voting for him, it was black women. So the fact that he's chosen someone, chosen a black woman as his running mate, seems to reinforce this this constituency that really was already in his in his corner. Was that a bit of a mistake in that he's reaching out to people who he already had their vote?
So I think historically there have been two philosophies on choosing a vice president with any electoral hopes attached to that, because as Art said, quite often vice presidents can only hurt you, not help you. But if you're trying to get an electoral boost by one you choose, you either choose someone who reaches out to a community you have not been able to reach out to. I think this is what John McCain was trying to do with Sarah Palin, reaching out to the far right of the party. Or you choose someone who is actually in the heart of your base of support to assure that your supporters come out for you. And I think that's the position that Joe Biden has taken. And I would argue historically, that's generally what's worked best. Few people are convinced, as Art already implied. I can think of only one case, 1960 with Lyndon Johnson, where you can point to a constituency that might have come out to vote for a candidate for John F. Kennedy because of a particular person on the vice presidential slot. What you have more often are people who are already enthusiastic, for whom you want to reinforce that enthusiasm and make sure they don't forget to come out and make sure they remind every single person in that constituency to vote for you. Part of Joe Biden's strategy is to make sure that he really maximizes the minority vote. He's running against a president who he perceives and will argue is hostile to minorities. And so every minority vote, particularly in states like Texas that have traditionally been Republican states that now look like they might flip, he's hoping that someone like Kamala Harris will inspire more of those voters who already don't like Trump to now come out and vote for him. So it was probably a wise choice in that sense. It's hard to imagine the alternative working, where if he chose someone who was far removed and far different from himself, it's hard to imagine that that would actually win people over.
This had to have been one of the least surprising vice presidential choices. I know most of us had speculated, even at the time when she was running, she was asked about whether she was going to be on the ticket. It seems to signal something about the Biden campaign, which is no surprises here. He's been playing very safe, and this selection seems to be a fairly safe selection. First, do you agree? And second, what does that mean about the campaign?
I certainly agree. I think what it tells you about Joe Biden now and historically is that he's a very politically savvy politician. He was not about to stick his neck out and make a selection that could in any way frame him for what he really is, which is a centrist. And I think that he certainly could have gone down the road of taking someone more progressive to placate the Bernieites out there. He chose not to. And I think he chose not to because that's not who Joe Biden is. Like it or not, that's not who he is. He is a left-leaning moderate, and I think he was looking for a left-leaning partner. And he got it with Kamala Harris. There were other choices available, you know, if he was looking for, obviously he was looking for a female, he set that out early. If he was talking about a person of color, there were other well-qualified female women of color, from Florida, from Georgia, from other states that, you know, could come into play when you're talking about the election in November. But I think what he did personally is he just dug down deep and said, who can I really work with and who's going to be on the same page with me so we can move this country forward? So some people aren't happy with that. Some people just think he should have gone more left. But at the end of the day, you know, the candidates move out to the extremes in the primary and they move back to the middle on the general. And that's exactly what Joe Biden did.
Yeah, Jeremy, as a response.
I agree 100%. I just wanted to emphasize that even though this might have been the obvious choice, it was still a courageous choice. And I'm not saying that because of Kamala Harris's politics per se. I'm saying that because of who she is. There's always that variable as to what people will do when they actually vote. And what Donald Trump proved in 2016 is there's still a lot of racism out there. Joe Biden believes those are not his voters, But nonetheless, we don't know for certain. And there are constituencies in Wisconsin and Michigan and elsewhere that voted in one election for Barack Obama and then in another election for Donald Trump. So we really don't know where they stand on this. So it was a courageous issue, a courageous decision on Joe Biden's part. I think if he were risk averse, he might have gone with Gretchen Whitmer, who's the governor of Michigan, right?
That's exactly right.
So part of it, I think Art and I are agreeing, part of it was, you know, choosing someone who had obvious national stature, who had been vetted, who had proven that she could be a good partner. But part of it was also recognizing that it was time to take this leap, to go into this new space and put an African-American woman or an Indian, Jamaican-American woman on the ticket, to put immigration front and center, to put birtherism out there again. We've seen that already, this false claim about her not being a citizen, to subject oneself to that for the purposes of, I think, serving a larger political agenda that Joe Biden represents.
Now, Jeremy made this reference. I want to ask you, Art, as well. One of the things that was striking about the primary process in the Democratic Party was that although it started off extremely diverse and intergenerational, it ended with two old white guys. And so it's odd for me to think, as Kamala Harris is 55 years old, that she's the young candidate, you know, out there. But in any case, that there's this need for the Democratic Party that over the course of the last few elections seems to have aged with its national candidates pretty dramatically, despite the fact that the people who are getting the headlines, you know, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are actually quite young, that the national ticket start to reflect what is clearly becoming an intergenerational differences between the two political parties.
I think it's a moment in time. And what I mean by that is I think we're at a time where it's sort of feast and famine. We don't have a lot of, we have people on the ends. We've got, you know, the older folks. You've got a bunch of, you know, young aspiring Dems and Republicans for that matter that are coming up. But there aren't a lot of sort of that mid-range. And I think that's where we're at. You know, politics is very cyclical. I think that, 4 years from now, the field might look, distinctly different. The other thing I would suggest is that I think the Democratic machine, for lack of a better word, was not going to be really comfortable with sort of sticking their neck out with someone who was young, like, you know, pick your favorite one. But I think that they just wanted to go with the tried and the true. And that's Joe Biden. Is he old? Absolutely. I mean, look, every candidate has warts. Kamala Harris has issues that she's going to have to battle through being when she was a DA, when she was a state AG, even as a U.S. senator, you know. And no politician gets to this level without having blemishes along the way. But I think she'll probably be able to fight through those pretty well. I mean, even just reading through, you know, the newspapers over the last, you know, since the nomination, there hasn't been this blistering, oh my gosh, I can't believe Joe Biden selected Kamala Harris. There's been, you know, nits, but that's pretty small stuff, all things considered.
Yeah, Jeremy.
I just wanted to follow up on that and say that there is a really interesting historical point here too, which is that the institutions of our parties no longer represent the people in their parties. And that's actually true on both sides. It's worse for the Republican Party. And I'm not saying that for ideological reasons. I'm saying that because you see in all surveys how the elected leadership is way out of the mainstream on issues of like economic issues, on the coronavirus, from where mainstream Republican voters are. It's true to some extent within the Democratic Party. We have party machinery and we have a machinery of government that's built around raising money and built around seniority in ways that crowd out younger voices. We're seeing more and more young people get elected to office in Congress and particularly at the state level. The largest county in Texas, one of the largest counties in the United States, Harris County, has a 36-year-old Hispanic woman who's the county leader, basically. So this is representative of how our society is changing. It's becoming more diverse and younger in its representation at the local level and in congressional races, but not in Senate races and not in presidential races. And that's something we need to think deeply about. I hope that's something actually that Kamala Harris herself we'll talk about. She has an argument to make that she had a disproportionately difficult road ahead of her during the primaries because they start out in New Hampshire and Iowa. And she's running as a candidate from California, from a diverse background. The deck was stacked against her from the start.
Absolutely. Now, Art, one of the highest profile moments in the debates was when Kamala Harris challenged Joe Biden in his position on busing and segregation. There's been a lot of conversation about, you know, what does this mean? Is this going to play a role, this, you know, this rift at all in the general election? And if so, what would be the best way to try to build a bridge to try to make that more of a positive rather than necessarily a negative for the Democratic ticket?
I personally have never seen that as a negative. Kamala Harris was trying to get the nomination. You know, you don't get the nomination by being the nice guy or a nice woman, as the case may be. You know, Kamala is a competitor. Joe's a competitor. They were all up there. And they weren't up there just the two of them. They were up there with, I don't know how many different candidates. I mean, it was like 12 people in three different days. And they, I mean, you had to distinguish yourself. And the only way you can really do that, I think, is to dig in where there's a wedge opportunity to sort of separate yourself out from the front runner. And it was an inroad. Some people called it, you know, sort of a cheap shot. And I never saw it as that. I thought that she was trying to demonstrate, you know, her differences against Joe. Does that become a liability in the long run? No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a primary. You know, if it was a problem, Joe wouldn't have brought her on. It's that simple. I think, if anything, I'm sure Joe was hurt initially, as anyone would be, because I think we're all sort of stunned when we were listening to that conversation. But no, I think you get over that. If your skin is that thin, then don't get into politics to begin with. I don't see that as being a problem. I really don't.
And Jeremy, I can sort of follow this up with you, but the nature of the comments on segregation and on race in America, et cetera, I think it's fair to say that after the killing of George Floyd and the protests, those issues have been transformed. My own suggestion is for Biden to suggest that he learned from the comments and his position has evolved like most Americans have. I guess, first of all, am I off base? And secondly, does the Black Lives Matter protests and what's been going on throughout the summer change that context?
Absolutely. This is, again, why these are such dynamic situations. We can study candidates and we can, you know, add up vote totals and things like that, but they're all about the context that they're in. And someone who's a great candidate in one moment is not a great candidate in another. Joe Biden has had to, in some sense, reinvent himself. He's trusted. He's well-liked. He's seen as competent. And I think in this election, competence is cool, right? Because it's in such short supply. So those are attractive features he has. But he does have to deal with the burden of being someone who has long had a questionable record on civil rights. People remember. I remember. I was in college. I was at Stanford when we had the Anita Hill hearings. And Clarence Thomas's confirmation. And Joe Biden was not a friend of Anita Hill's. He was a supporter of Clarence Thomas's in the end. And whether that was the right decision or not at that time, it doesn't age well for many of the Democratic voters, particularly in the progressive wing right now. So what Biden has to do, and what I think he started to do, Doug, is exactly what you said. He has to show that he has changed. Not necessarily admit mistake from the past, but say that was a different time. And now I'm living in a different time and I see this world differently. And that is why I think he made the claim he would choose a woman and then in the end chose a woman of minority background to show that he really cares about these issues and to treat her as a partner. What people are going to be noticing, what I've already heard my students and others saying, is not just that he chose her, the way he interacts with her. He interacts with her in a respectful way. He interacts with her in a way in which people who come from minority backgrounds can see respect shown. And I think that's what he's going to try to do. Joe Biden will never fully please Black Lives Matter progressive activists. And they have some very good points about blemishes in his record. But he's going to try to show that he's at least respectful, caring, and will reach out to them as much as they can expect from a candidate who's nationally viable. And he's going to argue, let's win this election. And even if I can't give you everything you want, I can give you more than anyone else would give you right now. And I think that's a pretty persuasive argument.
And oh, by the way, look at who I'm running against in his track record on race issues. I mean, you know, no one's perfect. And I'm sure Joe would be the first one to suggest he's not. But my goodness, you certainly could not put Joe Biden in the same camp as Donald Trump. No one would ever confuse those individuals.
Well, today Donald Trump said he's done more for African Americans than any other president.
So. Yeah, well, he's actually said quite a bit.
Yeah, of course, except for Lincoln. And so it's almost become axiomatic, art aspects of art first. It's become axiomatic to say the vice presidency has become considerably more important, from Gore becoming much more of a partner to, you know, Dick Cheney almost at times seemingly taking on the role of the president, or at least sort of like the COO of the White House, all the way down to with a president who takes so much of the spotlight. Donald Trump does give Mike Pence a role to play, a fairly substantial role to play with the coronavirus task force. With that in mind, we've always said we don't really care all that much about the vice presidency. The famous quote from John Garner that the vice presidency isn't worth a warm bucket of spit, I'll use the family friendly quote, does not seem to be the case any longer. So is this a more important decision than it has been in the past? And should we expect to see a continuing growing role of the vice presidency within the presidency itself?
Well, I think for at least this election, it certainly has to be. I mean, it's got to be on everyone's mind when you've got a nominee that's in their late 70s. And I don't want to sound ageist. I just want to sound pragmatic here. You know, Joe Biden will be in his early 80s, you know, if and when he finishes up that first term. Stranger things have happened than someone in their 80s passing away or having a major medical health event. So I think that's a piece of the puzzle. But I think your broader question is more interesting in the role of the presidency, you know, beginning on from Gore and on forward. I really think we have seen a more active role by vice presidents. I think with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, this will be no exception. Going forward, who knows? I think a lot of it has to do with the personality of the president. There are some presidents that really want to have, you know, Patsy sounds like the wrong word, and I'm sure it is, but someone with a lesser personality. It's almost like you want to make sure the bridesmaids aren't wearing the, you know, an outfit that makes the bride look bad. Well, it's sort of the same thing in a sense. So, you know, maybe this is a short term. I don't know. You know, Al Gore was what, 30 years ago, but maybe it's a trend, maybe it's not, but it's certainly in play this for this round.
Jeremy, sir, I'll give you the last word on that question. Should we expect to see an even more active, energetic, important vice presidency going into the future?
Yes. One of the points I made in my book, The Impossible Presidency, was that actually presidents, especially since Nixon, have found themselves so overwhelmed with things they have to do, with what we as scholars call the rise of the administrative state, a much larger executive agency with many more responsibilities, much more responsibility in the public eye, much more international responsibility. You need trusted surrogates. And one of the reasons presidents, Democrats and Republicans, have made more use of the vice president is for that purpose. The president feels the vice president is a loyal soldier because the vice president wants the president to support her or his running thereafter. So this is a loyal soldier you can send out, someone who also has some credibility with members of Congress, especially as in this case, as with Pence, as with Biden, someone who's come from the Senate, and someone who usually is pretty politically savvy. And so this is a tool you want to deploy. If a future president, Biden or someone else, doesn't use the vice president this way, he or she will have to find someone else instead.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, for your thoughts on this historic development with the selection of Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's running mate, the first woman of color on a major party national ticket. Our guests today have been Jeremy Suri, professor in the Department of History and the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. He holds the Matt Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs. And he's the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. And Arthur Auerbach, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern California, he is the author of The Dividing Line on Capital Punishment. Thank you both.